It's Wednesday, and that means it's Uncovered. I'm Anthony Davis, he's Ron Filipkowski, and together we uncover the MAGA propaganda that is often not covered by the mainstream media. Ron, hello, nice to see you. A week goes by so fast, and I should mention at the top that we are extremely grateful to the increasing support for this show. Wouldn't you say, Ron, it is, you know, we've been doing it for many months now, but it's been ramping up and we get so much interest and so much support and so many comments. And we're thrilled to the Midas Mighty and to anybody else that is joining this live broadcast every Wednesday.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, we're consistently every week over 300,000 people are watching. That's just incredible. I mean, for a long while, we were kind of 150, 200. And now, you know, it seems like we've got a lot more people now that are steady every week, and it's great. We work really hard to do the best we can to pack this with content.
Let's start today with some breaking news, which is, of course, that this impeachment hearing is going on and has been going on today. I must mention Jasmine Crockett, who's been rather brilliant. She always is. And this is trying to find something on Joe and Hunter Biden. So far, the Republicans have been unsuccessful to the extent that, you know, as Mankiewicz said today, you know, have a vote on it, put it to the vote, and still nothing from them.
Yeah, I mean, the three things that really made this hearing, and I watched the whole thing, for me was, number one was Lev Parnas being called. Democrats can bring in one witness. The Republicans had two, and they chose Lev Parnas, which is just a brilliant move because he was Rudy Giuliani's right-hand man. He was the one who set up the phone call with Zelensky. He knows where all the bodies are buried on the Trump side of this whole saga. And to have him in front of Congress and put him on national television was amazing. I think that's the reason why Fox did not cover this hearing, was because they did not want to have Lev Parnas on Fox. And so that was number one. Number two, you know, the one witness who testified for them was testifying from federal prison, where he's serving a 16-year sentence for defrauding $80 million out of pension funds. And that's only one of his many felony convictions. So that was the other part. And the third part is the wind is completely out of the sails here, because Comer already knows that this is not going to be an impeachment. I don't even think they're going to bring it for a vote. He's talking about that now the best he might get is a criminal referral being made to the Department of Justice, which will go nowhere. So yeah, those three things combined just made this probably a lot more entertaining for Democrats than Republicans.
They're basically just trying to run the clock to, you know, up to election time. To kind of give the impression that Biden and Hunter Biden are involved in some kind of criminality. They can't put their finger on what it is, but it's the chaos, it's the drama, it's the talking points that are repeated on right-wing media that kind of give them collateral. Let's see how Jamie Raskin dealt with them during his moment earlier.
With any luck, today marks the end of perhaps the most spectacular failure in the history of congressional investigations, the effort to find a high crime or misdemeanor committed by Joe Biden and then to impeach him for it. In prior hilarious episodes of this long-running madcap series, America got to see the following. One, nearly 20 fact witnesses who could not identify a single act of wrongdoing by President Biden, much less a high crime and misdemeanor, and who overwhelmingly testified that Biden was not involved in any of his family's business adventures. Two, three expert witnesses called by the majority itself, who said nothing that they had seen in the tens of thousands of pages of documents adduced by the majority even remotely approached the level of a high crime and misdemeanor. Bank records would show exactly what all the witnesses told us, that Joe Biden was not involved in his family members' businesses. Repeated voyeuristic displays of pornographic images by the majority, completely irrelevant to any conceivable legislative or investigative purpose. A star witness, Gal Luft, who turned out to be a Chinese agent and an illegal arms trafficker on the run from American justice. And the key piece of evidence, which launched the entire zany goose chase an FD 1023 form in which the FBI duly recorded a completely fictional tip about a $5 million bribe to Vice President Biden peddled by Alex Smirnoff, who has been criminally indicted by a Trump-appointed U.S. attorney, Special Counsel David Weiss, for felony counts of systematically lying to the FBI in constructing a false record about Joe Biden, and now sits in jail in California as a flight risk while the world studies his longstanding and extensive ties to Russian intelligence. Today, the good chairman and his ace MAGA detectives have finally jumped the shark. The comedy of errors comes crashing to an end.
Yeah. I mean, he's rather brilliant, isn't he? But most of the Democrats who are sitting in on that congressional hearing are brilliant. I mentioned Jasmine Crockett, but what we're seeing is just this constant pressure on James Comer to call a vote. He just can't do it because he knows he doesn't have the numbers.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't have it. So what they'll do is they'll refer this to DOJ. That won't go anywhere. They'll find there's no evidence. And then they'll complain that, you know, Merrick Garland was being partisan or something like that. I mean, that's how this is going to die. But, you know, when I watched that, I said probably a couple years ago that I thought Jamie Raskin would make a great Supreme Court justice. And some people pushed back on me by saying, no, we can't. We need him in Congress. We can't lose this man to the court. They're probably right. You know, now that he's been so heavily involved in these hearings, I don't think he could get confirmed now in the Senate anyway. But I think he's much too valuable for us in the House to have him on the court. But yeah, the Democrats on this committee became stars, you know, Moskowitz, Goldman, Crockett, Raskin. We could go right down the line. So many, Connolly, so many of them were just really, really great.
They suggested earlier this morning that they wanted to subpoena Jared Kushner, and Republicans shut that right down, didn't they?
Yeah, the funny part, Raskin made the motion to subpoena Jared Kushner over the $2 billion that he got with the Saudis. And so Comer does one of these roll call votes. The other thing that was interesting, by the way, is that Democrats had almost full attendance. They were all there through the whole hearing.
Yeah.
Republicans were going in and out. There was very few Republicans in the room throughout the hearing. They would come to do their questioning and then they would leave. So when Raskin called that up for a vote, there was almost no Republicans even in the room. And so he does a voice vote, you know, all in favor. And the Democrats are all, yay, you know, really loud. Republicans, it was almost silence. And he goes, it doesn't pass. So I think Raskin just let it go, you know.
Let's make the point, because this hearing is a perfect example of how Republicans are operating, that it's all performative. It's all political theater, not just in these congressional hearings, but also in primaries, also in Trump rallies, also in any of the kind of events that they try and give the impression that they're popular. Trump is proving, just by nature of the primaries, certainly, that he is not as popular as he would tell you. And with that in mind, let's actually look at last night's primary results, because, you know, these numbers suggest that actually he does not have the support amongst Republicans. And that is very concerning, because he needs a clean sweep in order to kind of to really close this deal in November, doesn't he? So here we go. Looking at Arizona, this is actually a list of percentages of Republicans that voted against Donald Trump in these primaries. 25% of Republicans in Arizona are not Trump fans. 25% in Kansas, 21% in Ohio, 19% in Florida, which is a very interesting number, because obviously Florida and DeSantis would give you the impression that, you know, Republicans have a huge majority, and 19% in Illinois. What's your analysis of these numbers, Ron?
Well, you know, when the first set of primary results rolled in, Iowa, New Hampshire, et cetera, and Haley was doing rather well, you know, getting 30, 35, even 40%. The Trump campaign spin at that time was, Well, those are open primaries to a great degree. And a lot of Democrats are crossing over to vote, and Democrats are talking about jumping into the Republican primary and voting. And that was skewing the results for Haley and DeSantis, et cetera. So that was their first excuse. Then Super Tuesday rolls around and they had a new excuse, because now, Haley in those states, I think it was like 10 states on Super Tuesday, was getting between 15 and 25% in every state across the board. So then their excuse was, it was after Super Tuesday. The primary is after Super Tuesday, after she dropped out. Then the excuse was, a lot of people are still voted early for her. That's why she got a big chunk of votes, because there was early voting and those people voted for her before she dropped out. Okay, all right, let's give them that one. But now we have last night. So last night, Haley's been out. Nobody could early vote for Haley. Nobody could early vote for DeSantis. And these are closed primaries last night for the most part. Only Illinois has a little bit of an open primary. The other four states do not. And Florida is complete lockdown, closed. Only Republicans can vote. In the other states, independents could vote in the Republican primary, but not Democrats. So partially closed, and look what the results were. The excuses are all gone. The fact of the matter is, there is a significant chunk of the Republican Party who will not support Donald Trump. And so the question is, what are they going to do in November? Yeah. And what I wrote this morning is, they're going to break three ways. Some are going to return to the fold. They're just going to come around and they're going to vote for Trump. Another chunk is going to stay home. They're either not going to vote at all, or they're going to vote none of the above in the presidential race, and then they'll vote Republican in the other races. And then you may have some that even vote for Biden. So or they're going to vote for third party. They'll vote for RFK or whoever, some libertarian candidate or something like that. But the bottom line is, Trump cannot lose those people, and he is going to lose those people.
And the way the media handles the coverage of Trump, and I'm talking also about the international media, because I have lots of friends in Europe who are writing to me recently, and they're like, oh my God, Trump's going to win, he's going to win. And I'm like, he's not. He can't. He doesn't have the support. The only person that tells us how successful and supported he is him. And that is his machine at work, isn't it? He's like convincing people, including international media, who are not very good at analyzing. In fact, a lot of the international media don't quite understand how the primaries work. And you know, the primary is not a good example for Trump's success in November.
No, not at all. I mean, I think the biggest thing is poll results too, but these polls are just garbage. Like, polls are just, they're useless now. They're consistently wrong. They were wrong in the 2022 midterms. Yeah. They were wrong in the special elections. I mean, they were wrong on the abortion ballot initiatives. Our polling system now, I don't know what they're doing, what's changed, the methodology, but it's broken. I think part of the problem is that they use these old methods where some of these pollsters are calling people with home phone landlines.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have them, so they're not reaching a lot of the voters, and I don't think they're getting an accurate sample. And if there was just one anomaly where the polls were way off, that would be one thing. But the polls have been wildly off so far during these primaries. So no, I'm definitely not convinced. I mean, I'm not like super confident. I'm a nervous wreck every day, which is probably a good thing. It makes me work harder.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I do feel like Biden is going to win.
I have a theory on the polling, which I'll just say quickly, and that is that you cannot poll cultists. If you're in the Trump cult, yeah, the actual polling system, the traditional polling system, doesn't work for you. You will have this blind follow no matter what Donald Trump does. And as you say, everybody else either doesn't have a landline, in which case they're not reaching Gen Zers and others who... Because we know that the youth vote is increasingly towards Biden, and people really understand this kind of sense of heart. I would say that I've noticed that immigration is absolutely going to be the central point of Republican propaganda going into the election, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I've already seen them ramping up that hate speech towards immigrants, and as terrifying as that is. Let's talk about an interesting thing with Afghanistan. This is a subject that I've really thought about a lot over the years. This was since the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which we may remember Donald Trump instigated and Joe Biden had to finish. I think it was supposed to happen in June, July, and it eventually happened in September time or something like that, when, you know, Joe Biden delayed it somewhat. And Trump has been pushing the propaganda that it was a disastrous withdrawal and that, you know, we left all this military equipment there and it's now in the hands of the Taliban. And it turned out not to be true, right?
Yeah, this has been something that has been frustrating for me for a long time, because Trump has been pushing this line since 2021.
Yeah.
He repeats it in every interview, every rally. He has the same rap on Afghanistan. It's complete fiction. Part of the frustration for me is that, like, the Democrats, the administration really did not push back on this lie, because, again, it's the unfortunate thing where a lot of them tune him out and don't pay attention to what he's saying and what he's doing.
Big mistake.
But that's how you let these lies take hold. So, look, let's talk about what does he say. His rap is that Biden left $82 billion worth of equipment there to put in the hands of the Taliban. This is what he claims. Let's talk about that number. That is the total amount spent by the United States in Afghanistan over a 20-year period.
Yeah.
That includes salaries for our contractors, our workers, our troops. That includes training and equipping the Afghan military, building infrastructure, building schools. That is the total budget of a 20-year time period in Afghanistan. That is not equipment that we left, okay? So that's number one. Number two, Trump says, when I left, I would have taken every piece of equipment with me. Every bolt, every nut, every screw is what the line that he uses. Okay. Yeah. Well, first of all, we did take everything out of there. Everything that was in possession of the U.S. government or U.S. military came out of Afghanistan. We left nothing behind. So the question is, what did we leave behind? What we left behind is $7.2 billion worth of equipment. Where was that equipment? In the hands of the Afghan military. We equipped them over 20 years. We trained them on the equipment. The whole point was for them to be able to defend themselves with that equipment. So the one question that I would ask Donald Trump, if any Fox or right-wing interviewer who interviews him all the time ever had the stones to stand up and ask him this very simple question, I would ask him this. Are you, when you say you would have taken all of that out of the country, are you saying that you would have disarmed the Afghan military before you withdraw? You would have taken all their equipment and weapons away from them that we spent 20 years training them on, and we would have disarmed them completely and just hung them out to dry and left with all of that equipment? Is that what you're saying you would have done? Because that would have resulted in far, far worse than 13 U.S. service members getting killed in a single attack. Way worse than that. Really, to be honest with you, the way Trump drew down the forces and left only, 2,500 people there, and the way he handled this with the Taliban, it's a miracle that the Biden administration was able to get out of there with only 13 service members killed.
I would agree. And I always got very frustrated with people who suddenly became experts on the military and said it was a disastrous withdrawal. Imagine trying to remove 2,500 troops when you've got the Taliban literally knocking on the door of the airport. It was, you know, the way, and there was that one clip famously of all of those Afghanis rushing that C-17 aircraft, which actually was not taking off. It had just landed and was taxiing, but visually it was a very upsetting image, and I think it was replayed by right-wing media over and over as an example of Biden's disastrous exit, and it wasn't. And in fact, the report on the withdrawal from Afghanistan blamed Trump and Biden equally for the disastrous withdrawal. But of course, Donald Trump wasn't there to take the blame, was he? And so let's take a quick look at this clip of Mark Milley.
Okay.
Because he really kind of sums it up. He, of course, at the time was the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
As I recall, and I think it's laid out in the SEGARS report, the special IG for Afghanistan, is about 80 some odd billion dollars worth of military aid total, that's everything from food and building barracks and uniforms and boots to include equipment, over 20 years. Right. And then he cites, I think it's $7.2 billion of military equipment, U.S. manufactured military equipment, that is with the Afghan security forces. That's Afghan-owned equipment, not American equipment. Every piece of American equipment that the American military owned came out with us with Scott Miller, or he destroyed it on site. And that's a fact. So the idea that the American...
So this this attack on Biden for not taking the equipment back is total bunk.
Chair recognizes Mr.
You're a former Marine, Ron. What's your feeling from a kind of military perspective?
I mean, nobody expected. This is what nobody anticipated. You know, Trump left us with only 2,500 troops there to get out, to get everybody out. Okay, and all the civilians, all our translators, everything. So we had to rely on the Afghan military to provide us protection, security, and the time. We spent 20 years training them to do that. They collapsed in a week. In a week, the entire Afghan government surrendered to the Taliban. Nobody, there wasn't anybody anywhere who predicted that. Not one person, not a Republican, not Trump, nobody. So what do you do when an entire country's infrastructure and military that you spent 20 years training collapses in 7 days and you're scrambling to get 100,000 people out of the country? I mean, there isn't anyone who would have dealt with that well. Trump probably would have started dropping bombs on crowds, you know, for all we know, you know, and it would have been far worse. So, no, I think this was a setup by Trump. I think this is why Trump didn't try and withdraw, because he knew that it was going to be a mess. And, you know, it's perfect because for him politically, because now, of course, he can blame it on Biden.
Trump negotiated with the Taliban, supposedly, didn't he? He was in communication with the Taliban. Yep. And I mean, the whole, as you say, the whole thing kind of stinks, doesn't it? But I was thinking about, you know, when people criticize the withdrawal because, you know, visually it seemed so messy. You say only 13 service people lost their lives in that, which, you know, considering, is pretty amazing. But it was making me think of the way that that SEAL team went and got Osama bin Laden. That wasn't clean. They lost a helicopter, right? I mean, that was incredibly planned. There's a wonderful film about that, actually, isn't there? Is it called Zero Dark 30 or something? Right. But, you know, they lost an entire military helicopter in the compound of Osama bin Laden's home in Pakistan. You know, that's another example of how messy these military operations can get. And yet, you know, they know that they might lose a helicopter. They know that they might have to leave equipment behind. It's just part of, you know, it's not like moving house as a residential home, so you take everything with you. This is the theater of war.
And the postscript to that is the State of the Union, where Ryan Mast, the right-wing congressman, invited a father of one of the Marines who died to the State of the Union, who told him ahead of time he was going to disrupt Biden's speech. He did. He started screaming out, you know, U.S. Marine Corps, you know, and his unit number and all that. Had to be dragged out after repeatedly warned and arrested. So they get that. They get the national primetime disruption over this. Then he's arrested by Capitol Police, which has nothing to do with Biden. Okay, that's run by the House. And then they make a big deal out of that this week, that this is outrageous that he was arrested. So what happens? They dropped the charges yesterday against the guy. So it's like, no matter what you do, you bend over backwards for these people, but they're going to continue to try and use this for political advantage and just lie.
On that, let's talk about the National Guard on January 6th, because this is, you know, like the withdrawal from Afghanistan. This is another lie, another example of this performative faux outrage. You know, Trump claiming that, you know, the National Guard was ready to go, 10,000 troops, and Nancy Pelosi didn't do it, or was it Nikki Haley? That's an inside joke. And in fact, let's have a look at this little clip. This is the acting Secretary of Defense, Chris Miller, when he was put on the spot and asked about the National Guard on the 6th of January.
I just want to be clear here that since then, in February of 2021, Mark Meadows said on Fox News that, quote, even in January, that was a given. As many as 10,000 National Guard troops were told to be on the ready by the Secretary of Defense. Is there any accuracy to that statement?
I'm not from my perspective. I was never given any direction or order or due of any plans of that nature.
There it is.
This is more Trump propaganda in trying to rewrite the history of January 6th. He was calling for, because the House just released their alternate history of January 6th, done by one of the worst, most reprehensible members of the House, Barry Loudermilk, put out this report. And as a result of this report, Trump was calling for every member of the January 6th committee to be arrested and jailed, okay? So what is he calling about over this point, which is the report contained a transcript of Mark Meadows in February 2021, a month after January 6th, going on Fox News and making this claim on behalf of Trump, making up a lie and saying that Trump directed Chris Miller to have 10,000 National Guard troops at the ready to go, but Nancy Pelosi refused them. This is their story. It's a complete lie, okay? And then Kash Patel, who's a Trump flunky who hangs out in South Florida, who sells Trump-themed children's books, backed him up, said, oh, yeah, I heard it too, okay? He has no credibility whatsoever. So here's Chris Miller. So the January 6th committee brings Chris Miller in, the Secretary of Defense, and says, were you ever told to have 10,000 National Guard troops? Did Nancy Pelosi ever refuse? He said, absolutely not. That never happened. But that's not in Barry Loudermilk's alternative history. What Trump's own Secretary of Defense testified to, is not in there. What they're saying is you need to believe Mark Meadows. Now, what do we know? After Mark Meadows did that interview, a year later, Cassidy Hutchison flips on him, and Mark Meadows is now cooperating. And I guarantee you that when Mark Meadows testifies, if he ever does, he's going to admit that what he said in that interview about this subject was a lie.
Truth Social was actually down for a bit yesterday, but Trump managed to get out a post about Cassidy Hutchison and, you know, criticizing her, trying to give the impression that she's not a credible witness. And I mean, they're scared of her because, you know, she was right in the room where it happened. And I do recommend her book, which interestingly has the title Enough. Certainly is. Okay, sticking with January 6th for just a moment, let's talk about Peter Navarro. Yesterday, it was his turn to be led to prison. He appealed the ruling. He went to the Supreme Court. Were you surprised that the Supreme Court, which, as we know, is a Trump-stacked court, were like, nope, sorry, Pierre, you're on your own, son?
No, I mean, I put out a tweet when he first filed his appeal. I said, there's a 0% chance that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
There was just no way. And you know, Chief Justice Roberts was the one who wrote the short little blurb, and he said, we're not going to hear this. But, you know, his whole defense and the whole basis of his appeal is somewhat ridiculous. I mean, because what he said is that Trump, when he got the subpoena to testify, okay, well, first of all, let's rewind. How did this all start? It all started because in 2021, in the summer, he went on Steve Bannon's show and was bragging about how he cooked up the scheme with Steve Bannon, who was not part of the administration, had nothing to do. He came up with the scam of the so-called Green Bay sweep plan of how they were going to pitch this through Congress. And he bragged about it on Bannon's show. I happened to be watching the show that day. I clipped it. I posted it on Truth Social. It went hugely viral. A lot of stories got written about it. And then 6 weeks later, Ari Melber had him on his show and went into more details about it.
He repeated it, didn't he? And he went into so much detail that he was just writing his own prison sentence.
That's exactly right. And so what happened was, it started with my tweet, then it went to Ari Melber, then it went to the J6 committee. And then what happens? He says, he calls Trump and says, what should I do? And Trump told him, do not testify. I'm invoking executive privilege. So Navarro basically had a choice, because the courts ruled there's no executive privilege here. Why? Because Peter Navarro was the trade advisor for the United States government. Okay. Not for Donald Trump, for the United States government, a trade advisor. He negotiates foreign trade agreements with foreign governments. Trying to overturn an election has nothing to do with being the trade advisor to the United States. So there's no executive privilege, because when he decided to step out of his role as trade advisor and start trying to overturn elections, he was engaged in a criminal conspiracy at that point. And that's what the court so ruled. So his executive privilege claim is bogus. But the other thing Navarro said is, right up until the last day when he was supposed to appear, he said the day before, he called Trump again. And he said, listen, boss, if you tell me I can testify, I'll go. And Trump said no. So who put Peter Navarro in jail? Donald Trump put Peter Navarro in jail.
He had a lot to say yesterday before he was carted off, including, you know, blaming Hillary Clinton and a whole bunch of stuff. Let's have a little listen to this brief press conference. Unfortunately, that woman wasn't there with the sign behind him this time.
Well, that's because this is in Miami and she lives in D.C.
Okay, here it is.
There were more FBI informants up on Capitol Hill that day, possibly instigating that crowd, than the FBI itself could keep track of. There were stories about that. Why did Nancy Pelosi not provide more Capitol Hill police? Why did Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, have the National Guard so far away? And as for the destruction of evidence, sir, look, the things they are doing, you know, Hillary Clinton, like, cleansing her, there's so many things these Democrats have done that would actually justify prison. You juxtapose that with me, all I've done is my duty. All I have done is my duty to this country, the Constitution, my commander-in-chief.
His voice cracked a little bit at the end there. This is obviously very tough for him and very emotional for him. But I can hear in that his head is so full of conspiracy theories that he can't even put them in any kind of order. It's like, right, Hillary Clinton this, and this one this, and this, and it's like, that is what a lot of Republicans are dealing with and living through. It's just a barrage of conspiracies, none of which are true, but have almost caused, Bandy Lee calls it Trump contagion, and that's what he's suffering from.
And you know, the problem is that no one ever calls them on anything. That's why he did so badly on Ari Melber's show, is because, you know, Navarro goes on podcasts and does interviews all the time on right-wing media, but on right-wing media, he never gets questioned.
No pushback.
So, I mean, never gets fact-checked. So even right there, what did he say? He said Mark Esper had the National Guard far away. Mark Esper had been fired two months before January 6th. He wasn't even there. It was Chris Miller. So I would say, first of all, Mark Esper was fired. Why was Mark Esper fired, by the way? Why did Trump fire his Secretary of Defense and replace him with Chris Miller right before January 6th? What can you give me an explanation for why that happened? Then I would say, number two, Chris Miller testified before the J6 committee that never happened. So I mean, you just push him back on those two things and you're going to knock him off his pedestal. So, yeah, but you know, good, you know, right now he's probably enjoying, you know, some nice, delicious food in the mess hall there in the federal pen where he'll be for the next few months.
Can I ask you a question? Something that occurred to me yesterday when this was all going on. Can anybody write to the Supreme Court and say, please hear my case, you know, on appeal? Did he get, you know, John Roberts literally replying personally because of his white privilege, or can anybody make that request?
No, I mean, I think because he came from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals that he would get that ability to file a petition and get a response. But no, if some look, the Supreme Court does. They get like 10,000 petitions a year from like inmates. Most of them are from inmates without lawyers all over the country who are suing or wanting their cases heard for a variety of things. Most of them never reach a justice's eyes. They're just the clerk just offhand dismisses it. You have no jurisdiction. So if somebody, like, say, had been convicted in, like, you know, Bangor, Maine of burglary and they send something to the Supreme Court, they're not even going to look at it. But in this particular case, an appellate court heard it one step below the Supreme Court. So you're going to get a justice to deny that. But you only get one. I mean, only one looks at it.
Right. So. I want to talk about this bloodbath quote that has been, you know, causing all sorts of drama. This is something that Trump said in his rally the other day. Where was he? Iowa or somewhere? When he was
Iowa. It was I think it was Georgia.
Yeah,
I think it was Georgia.
He, you know, the phrase and the word bloodbath is incredibly explicit.
No, it was Ohio. Sorry,
it was Ohio. I knew it sounded like Iowa.
Yeah,
and he, you know, when he said this, the extended quote was that he was talking about the auto industry and, you know, about jobs and that kind of stuff. And so then there was this controversy because then the right said, well, the left are going crazy about this bloodbath, but they didn't play the full quote. And he was talking about the auto industry. And the point that I think that a lot of liberal commentators were making is that to use that kind of language as he did is really inappropriate, considering that, you know, some of the history of what he said, referring to fine people on both sides and, you know, supporting tiki torch bearing Nazis. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, if you want to just interpret like what he meant to say and you want to be generous to him, let's say to give him the benefit of the doubt, really a lot of the right wingers are wrong and a lot of the left wingers are also wrong. Okay. So, was he talking about a bloodbath being like violence in the streets at that particular moment? Probably not. Was he limiting his comments to the auto industry, as the right is saying? No, he was not. Because he said, in the auto industry and in the rest of the country, a bloodbath will happen.
Right.
So if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and be generous, you could say he was talking about the whole economy is going to be a bloodbath. So, okay. So what we did is we put out the raw clip and said, here's what he said, and quoted him. We didn't attempt to interpret it in any way. We just put out the clip. And the problem is a lot of the press were interpreting it probably less generous to Trump. And then you had the right interpreting it very generous. And then you had them going at it. And that's what caused the whole controversy. But here's the overarching point. Is that Trump, in his interview on Sunday with Howard Kurtz with Fox, was asked about this. And he was asked by Kurtz, you know, he was saying, I don't think that the language that you use, this inflammatory, violent rhetoric that you use all the time, these adjectives that you use, are helpful. And I don't think that they're good for you to be able to win over these suburban moms who won't vote for you. And he said, why do you do that? And Trump said, to get more coverage. He said, when I use words like that, everyone goes crazy and then they cover me. And that's what I'm looking for, coverage and attention. So I have to use language like that, or else, you know, they don't cover my speeches. So it's very calculated on his part. But here's the other big point. The other big point is this. If you polled every person leaving that Ohio rally that day and you said, hey, did you hear what he said about if I lose, bloodbath will happen? And you asked them, what did you think Trump was talking about? I promise you less than 10% would have said the auto industry.
Yeah, it's a call to arms in the same way that the language on January 6th was the same. We're going to go to the Capitol. We're going to fight like hell. And if you don't fight, we're not going to have a country left. And I'll just show this video of the Fox News interview where he basically admits that inflammatory language, as Ron just said, is how he operates. He's a piece of shit, isn't he?
But here's my theory, that you use over-the-top, sometimes inflammatory language, because that drives the media debate. Did Trump go too far? And then you get the next several news cycles talking about your issue and, you know, whether your language was too much or wasn't enough. Any thought that I might be right on that?
It also gets people thinking about very important issues, that if you don't use certain rhetoric, if you don't use certain words that maybe are not very nice words, nothing will happen.
So, look, I think that he's partially telling the truth there. I think he does use those words to get attention, but there's more to it than that, that he won't admit to, is that he is trying to incite them. He is prepping them to cause problems and to rise up. When he says this next election is stolen, which he's going to do, he wants another January 6th, even bigger though.
And there's been zero media coverage of this, this notion that he will do this again. He will incite more violence because people, the media, I would say, are working on the assumption that he's going to win the election. And therefore, they are not considering the fact that if he loses, and there's a good chance that he will lose, that he won't go quietly and history will just repeat itself and we'll find ourselves in the same cycle of him calling it election fraud and all this stuff. And hopefully Dominion voting systems will sue everybody again.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something about that?
No, I agree. I mean, I think there's no possible way he's going to concede. There's no possible way he's going to admit he loses. He's going to sue. He's going to go crazy. He's going to hold rallies. Yeah, I think what happened in 20 is going to be 10 times worse because if he loses this time, he's going to prison. So all bets are off.
The malignant narcissist does not go quietly. And if you know anything about narcissism and you understand this kind of personality disorder, you'll know that nothing will stop him from saying anything. And bloodbath is just the beginning. And I've noticed, I'm sure you have, Ron, that, you know, especially now with this pressure for him to find $500 million and he can't get a bond and all of this stuff and the idea that he could lose Trump Tower or lose his assets, he is really starting to, you know, squit himself. And I recognize that the unraveling and the use of inflammatory language is only going to increase between now and the election because he's on the ropes.
Yep, absolutely. And we're already seeing that. I mean, he's really coming apart at the seams. Things just keep getting worse. You see it in his face. You see it in his body language, the stress. It's clearly there. Much as he tries to hide it, he can't hide it.
We have to take a quick pause for our sponsor, but we're going to come back and talk about Mike Pence, who has maybe it was something to do with the fact that they were going to chanting hang Mike Pence might be the reason why he's not endorsing Donald Trump. We'll talk about that next here on Uncovered. Are you self-conscious about your smile due to stains? Are your teeth aging you? Food and drink are known to stain teeth. Coffee, wine, they stain over time. So what can you do to brighten your smile? Well, you should give Smile Actives a try. Smile Actives is safe, effective, easy to use, and will keep you smiling proudly. I personally have been to a dentist and had a teeth whitening treatment. It was painful, it was uncomfortable, and it was not a experience that I would want to repeat. Well, simply add Smile Actives Pro Whitening Gel to your regular toothpaste. Do it at home. It's been formulated with PolyClean technology to boost stain removal and deliver active whitening ingredients into teeth's grooves to get better whitening. People will start commenting on your whiter, brighter smile in just days. Smile Actives is the whitening boost your favorite toothpaste needs to give you the smile you deserve. Visit smileactives.com/uncovered today to receive a special buy one, get one free offer with auto delivery plus free shipping and handling. That's smileactives.com/uncovered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Welcome back. Ron, Mike Pence, surprised that he's not endorsing Donald Trump, or was this completely expected?
I was a little surprised. I mean, I think that a lot of people felt like he was going to endorse him, you know, and he was going to come around like so many of the others have. But, you know, he's kind of a stubborn guy. And once he digs in his heels and makes up his mind, that's it. And, You know, I don't think it has helped him any. I don't think it helped Trump any that he never tried to make amends. You know, he never backed off his criticisms of Pence. He could have come out at any point in time over the last 3 years and say, you know what, let's bury the hatchet, pick up the phone, call him. You know, maybe I went too far, or maybe I pushed you too hard. But that's not in Trump's DNA. You know, he simply cannot apologize. He cannot admit a mistake. And I think if he had just done that one simple phone call, I think that Pence would have supported him 100%. But because I think Pence wanted to, he said he wanted to forgive him. He has forgiven him, he said, as a Christian, but he still won't endorse him. But this is really bad, because this is the first time a vice president in the history of the United States has not endorsed his president running again. The only thing that you can come close to was in 1968, you had when LBJ was running, his I think it was Hubert Humphrey was his vice president, didn't endorse him, but LBJ never announced he was running it for re-election, so that doesn't really count. And when you put that together with the fact that of Trump's 44 cabinet members, only four have come out to publicly endorse him. 40 have not. And one of those four is Mark Meadows, who's probably going to testify against him in criminal court. You know, that to me, that's just devastating. And I think that is really something that's going to sink in with a lot of these moderate, low information voters who aren't really plugged into the internet. Is that's really going to resonate to them when you say Trump's own vice president, his own secretary of defense, his own attorney general, his own, you know, transportation secretary, we can go right down a list, former chief of staff, none of them will endorse him. What does that tell? That's just shocking. That's never happened before in American history.
In fact, some of them call him a moron. Let's take a look at Mike Pence making the announcement.
We have not heard from you. Will you be endorsing your former president? You were on the ticket with him last time around.
Well, Martha, I appreciate the question. And it should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year.
There's always so much drama in Mike Pence. It's so weird, isn't it? What do you think?
First of all, you know, he says it should come as no surprise. I think it came as a huge surprise.
Right.
I think that yeah, a lot of MAGA and right wing and Republicans were very surprised. So I don't know what he's talking about there. Read the room.
Who is he going to endorse? I mean, there are no other candidates.
No, he won't endorse anybody. He said he's in follow up interviews. He said that he asked, well, who are you going to vote for? And he said, I'm not going to say, but you know, he's probably going to go in and write in his brother or Ronald Reagan or something like that. You know,
let's talk about this money. I alluded to it earlier, this $500 million bond that Donald Trump is now responsible for. This is money that he simply doesn't have, despite his lawyer, Alina Harbor, going on TV and saying he's a billionaire. Of course he's got the money. He's got plenty of cash. We spoke about that a little bit, but you know, the reality is that he simply doesn't have access to the funds, and no bonding agency is willing to stump up for him.
Yeah, and I've heard people come to his defense, including Mark Cuban, which kind of surprised me a little bit, where he was talking about the fact of, hey, you know, nobody's that liquid, nobody has that kind of cash laying around, and it's hard to secure financing when all your properties are leveraged and all of that. Well, all of that may be true, but the problem is Donald Trump said under oath that he has the money. His lawyer said he can post the bond money, no problem. So when you go under oath and you say, I have $400 million in cash in the bank, I've got plenty of money, it's going to be no problem posting the bond. See, what he's doing is he has to say that to his followers. It's that false bravado all the time we get with Trump. I'm rich. I'm a billionaire. This is no problem. It's no big deal. Same thing he said about Pence not endorsing him. Oh, that's no big deal. It's a big deal. He knows it's a big deal, but he's got to play it off with this false bravado. Same thing with the bond. He didn't have $400 million. Okay, he was just bragging. So what I would say to anybody like Mark Cuban or somebody else who wants to try and defend him on this, I would just say, well, you know, he told us that he did. So I took him at his word, right? I believe that now, of course, Trump's latest spin yesterday was, you know, that he that now he's saying he does in fact have the money, but he wants to use it on his campaign.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to use it on bomb money, when this guy's never spent any of his own money on his campaigns.
No, he gets literally the poorest of his voters to you know, support him with 10 and 15 and 20 bucks. I mean, that's the tragedy of this, is that, you know, he's a grifter, he's a thief, and when there is a, you know, a moment where it is the right time to use his own money, he absolutely won't. Admittedly, he can't sell his assets very quickly, and, you know, we now know, because of the other case about, you know, him overvaluing his properties, that they're not going to be worth anything like the kind of money that he needs anyway.
Here's the other thing. I mean, he's had months to prepare for this day, but he was in denial about it. I mean, he knew that he was going to get socked with at least a $250 million fine. It ended up being more than that. You know, that was a little bit of a surprise, I think, to him. But the bottom line is, three, four months ago, he should have made preparations for this. You know, I've represented thousands of people in criminal court who go to trial, and we always prepare for a loss. You know, even though you hope to win, you have your ducks in a row, you have your bills paid, you have your stuff moved into storage, you have your bond money ready. I bring up to every jury trial, I bring appellate paperwork with me. When the jury's reading their verdict, I have appellate paperwork sitting in front of me, ready to go. Trump could have done all that, but he didn't. He just was in denial that none of this was going to happen.
So are his lawyers, right? His lawyers are also in the cult. And if you're talking about people like Alina Harbor, then you're talking about people that are so brainwashed as to think that Donald Trump is as rich as he is and is likely to win as he is. And there is no room for the preparation that you might do for court. Let's take a look at the clip.
Are you confident that you can pay $464 million?
I built a great company, one of the greatest companies anywhere in the country, especially when it comes to real estate. Have some of the greatest assets in the world. And this is a rigged trial. This was a rigged trial by a crooked judge and a crooked attorney general. And we're fighting it out with them. We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away, or at least take the cash element away. Billions of dollars in value, billions of dollars in properties, but they'd like to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign. And this is just a corrupt group of people. It's election interference, and we'll see how the courts rule on it. And I'll be guided by the courts.
I was surprised at that phrase, I'll be guided by the courts. I didn't think he would take that position. What's the thinking there, Ron?
No, he's not guided by the courts. When he said that too, I was a little surprised too. Like, Trump is never guided by the courts. He's forced to do things by courts sometimes, but you know, he rarely complies.
Straight after that, we don't have the clip, but Melania was asked a question, wasn't she? She was asked if she was going to be appearing on the campaign trail with her husband. Can you remember what she said?
Yeah, she said, stay tuned, right? So I take responsibility for that question being asked. I've been the one who's been out there banging the drum for a year that Melania has not appeared at a single campaign event. And I continue to, you know, goad the press into making this an issue and talking about it. They don't want to. They don't seem to want to bring it up, but I think it's very significant. So he's finally starting to get asked about it. And he keeps saying, very soon, very soon. So finally they get a chance, because she's making one of her extremely rare public appearances with him, because it's their time to vote. So she always does that with him. That's part of their routine and of their scripted events. She goes with him when he votes. And she got asked about it. I mean, she wasn't supposed to speak or answer any questions. She was just standing behind him, but a reporter addressed that directly. And you could see kind of look on his face, like they weren't expecting that. And you could see he was a little nervous about what she would say. And she just said, stay tuned, which basically means no, she's not going to be on the campaign trail.
It reminded me of, you know, in movies, the background artists get paid a whole lot more if they get a line that is sometimes given to them by the director in the moment, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, it looked like Trump was like, don't say anything. It's going to cost us more money. You're a background artist. You're not a senior performer in this. Is that really what's going on there?
He was very relieved with her answer. I mean, if you really break down that clip, which I posted on Twitter, and you watch his facial expression, when the question gets asked, you see this worried look. Then you see him looking at her like very nervous, like, what is she going to say? What is she going to do? I need to interrupt here. And then she says, stay tuned. And he gets this big smile, like, right answer.
Maybe she gets a bonus for that. You know, maybe she'll get an extra $50. Yeah. A lot of people are talking about this Don Lemon interview with Elon Musk. Just for context and background, Don Lemon came off CNN a while ago. He has recently found a home on X as a host, a little bit like Tucker Carlson. He gets Elon Musk to do this interview with him, and off the back of this interview, he gets fired from X because Elon didn't like the way the interview went.
Lasted one day.
Right. It's a very interesting setup, this, isn't it? Because, you know, people, you and I and many commentators have made the point that the only reason that Elon Musk paid $44 billion for Twitter was because he wanted to redirect the national conversation, the town square, to take on a more of a far-right, nationalistic approach. He claimed he was a free speech absolutist, but that's certainly not the case. He is very much a Trump supporter in disguise. And, you know, he was asked if he was going to support Donald Trump, and he said, I haven't made my mind up yet, but it's not going to be Biden.
He will endorse Trump. I predicted that before. Yeah.
And really the tragedy of this is that, you know, firstly, Twitter is not worth $44 billion anymore. Some are saying it's not even worth a quarter of that. But secondly, a lot of the political discourse has changed on that platform. It is now very much this kind of far right and Christian nationalist hate speech, which is horrific. And Elon Musk, even in this interview, was kind of asked about hate speech and whether or not he takes any responsibility for not moderating some of this horrific racist and xenophobic language that appears on Twitter now. And he kind of denied any responsibility. Got a little clip. Let me play some of the interview with Don Lemon.
So you said if they kill the company, it's them. But doesn't the buck stop with you? I mean, you're...
Don, I have to say, choose your question carefully. There's 5 minutes left.
Okay, but so...
Is this the question you want to ask?
Same question is, you said that they are killing the company, but you're the head of the company. The buck doesn't stop with you?
I acquired X in order to preserve freedom of speech in America, the First Amendment. And I'm going to stick to that. And if that means making less money, so be it.
So I have to be... Listen, I'm just being honest, right? I'm not trying to, like, get you or anything. I was just surprised that you would blame other people for killing the company. I mean, when you say the buck stops with the president of the United States, regardless of what happens, right? So, why would that question upset you? You seem upset by it, are you?
I think you...
And I'm not trying to upset you.
Well, you are upsetting me because the way you're phrasing the questions, I think, is not cogent.
It's not what?
Not cogent.
Cogent.
Yes.
Go ahead.
If given a choice where an advertiser is saying, like, you have to censor all this content on the platform, irrespective of where their advertising appears, then our answer will be like, look, you can choose where you want your advertising, what you want your advertising to appear next to, but you can't insist on censorship of the entire platform. And if you insist on censorship of the entire platform, even where your advertising doesn't appear, obviously, we will not want them as an advertiser.
So what would you say to advertisers who have left the platform or who are considering coming back or not coming back? What would you like to say to them?
Well, first of all, almost all of our advertisers are coming back to the platform. So it's a very short list of advertisers who are not coming back to the platform. Our advertising revenue is rising rapidly. And our subscription revenue is rising rapidly, and I feel very optimistic about the future of the X platform.
Okay. Listen, I'm not...
Just a brief moment there. I do recommend people watch it in full because it really was a very interesting expose of Elon Musk. And also, the thing that interests me is, you know, we have projected onto Elon Musk over the years that he is a genius and that he is, you know, Tony Stark, you know, kind of like a Marvel character. But when you see him interviewed, he really doesn't fill me with any confidence whatsoever. It really is like he's just making it up as he goes along. You know, he was born into privilege. He's you know, he bought Tesla. He didn't create Tesla. This is a guy who, you know, to all intents and purposes, got very, very lucky and also has quite, you know, deep-rooted far-right political tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, there's another part of that interview where he said, which was very revealing, which is he said that he is not going to ban anything on the site, any speech or communication posted on the site, unless it's illegal, meaning like a crime.
Yeah.
Well, there's almost no speech, pure speech, that you can put on a platform. In other words, if you're in front of somebody physically and you threaten to beat them up or kill them or something like that, that could be an assault. But you have to have an immediate ability to carry out that threat for it to be a crime. So when you're posting something online, you don't have an immediate ability to carry out whatever threat you're making. So almost no speech is a crime. So if that's your standard, that means you have no standards. That means anything goes. And that is really what he wants. He wants anything to go, except for the things that he doesn't like, you know, that he'll damp down and he'll suppress. But for the most part, anything goes. Anti-Semitism, Nazism, you know, abuse, hate, racism, you name it. And because in the name of free speech, that should all be allowed. And if you're an advertiser, and I don't buy what he says there about advertisers all coming back.
Agreed.
I don't believe that because I don't see them on the platform. I see fringy stuff. When he says subscriptions are up, I see foreign bot subscriptions are up. I don't see normal people with blue checks. I see a lot of Pakistani bots, you know, with blue checks. Why are they buying blue checks to go to the top of the replies? Why are foreign bots going to want to go to the top of the replies? Because I think they want to tamper with this election. And they're gearing up to do that. So this is why advertisers don't want to come back, because there is no, what he's saying is, well, they can just say, I don't want to be next to bad people. How are they supposed to keep track of that?
Yeah.
You know? So I think as an advertiser, you just can't trust him.
I personally don't believe in the kind of free speech that he believes in. And I say that because I grew up in a country that does not allow hate speech. There are laws against hate speech, both in person and online. And, you know, people are criminalized for their hate speech all the time. And, you know, I'm good with that. And that might seem odd to Americans and this whole kind of concept of my, you know, my First Amendment rights. But trust me, you know, I worked both as a you know, I was a citizen, but I was also a broadcaster on regulated news because the news was very much you know, we had standards, and there are certain things you can't talk about, and there is certain, you know, criticism you might have personally that you're not allowed to say, and I was totally good with that because it tries to maintain a civil, moral society, and I still felt that I had the right to say anything. But no one should be talking about, you know, immigrants or LGBTQ plus people in the way that so many people are in the United States and getting away with it, because there is always a victim.
Well, how about this? Just the other day, about 3 or 4 days ago, Elon Musk posted a video that purported to show cannibalism in Haiti, that purported to show a dead body in the street and somebody who is supposedly Haitian eating the arm or the leg of that dead body. And there's no content warning. I follow Elon Musk, so I'm scrolling, and I get this video from Elon Musk, which means 150 other million other people and bots got it, of somebody doing cannibalism on my with no warning, no, hey, push play if you want to see it. None of that. Yeah. It's just out there openly playing. Now, you know what happened? That was going all over the place on right-wing media. First of all, it wasn't Haiti. It was years ago. It was somewhere else. So, again, it was another fake clip. And the actual ex took it down. They removed it from his own tweet got removed by his own company for violating
eventually terms of service. Eventually he also so tweeted
you want to advertise on next to that.
Yeah, right. He also tweeted this morning about immigration, and he reposted a video that another ex contributor had created that was one of these promo videos scaring people into thinking that all immigrants are criminals, and it was horrific. I mean, this video was grim. And he posted it. Elon Musk quote tweeted it and wrote, "This is happening." Well, it's not happening. None of it is happening. It's completely false. And again, this is all setting up for the election and all setting up to support Donald Trump. And
I'll tell you another one, by the way. He posted a video last week that supposedly showed migrants in New York City cooking rats on the street and eating them. It was a video of people in, I think it was Ecuador, like 6 years ago, eating hamsters.
Right.
It was in New York City. This is what's happening on the platform. So whatever he says in that Don Lemon interview is nonsense.
I mean, it's a shame because, you know, I used to like Twitter. It was a place for some, you know, enjoyable political discourse. And that's not where it's at now. And incidentally, Ron and I are both on Threads. Which is,
yes, we are.
the alternative. Okay, we don't have long left. I want to talk about Scott Presler and the RNC. Tell us what's going on with this. This is a very kind of interesting story, isn't it?
An interesting story that not many people know. Okay, so this is a political story from last year about Presler. So the reason why this is being brought up right now is because Laura Trump is hiring him to be in charge of ballot chasing operations. So Presler is a guy who has been trying to get a job with the RNC since 2016. And you see here, there was a gay sex scandal that he was involved in. And that is the reason why he was let go. And the reason why Ronna McDaniel, despite Presler's best efforts over the years to get hired back, has steadfastly refused to hire him. This guy is a loose cannon. I mean, he was part of Gays for Trump for a while. He's one of these guys that draws a lot of attention to himself. And in other words, the style is much more than the substance. He draws a lot of attention to himself running around to gun shows and registering voters. So he might go fly to some place, go to a gun show, register four people, all four of whom are probably not even going to vote. And, you know, you'll post that on social media and he's a big hero. So meanwhile, you know, Taylor Swift in one Instagram post will register more voters than Scott Presler will register in his entire life. But all these MAGA people, because Presler is this self-promoter, think that he's this Pied Piper of voter registration when he is not. So he has been lobbying Ronna McDaniel every day for years and years, and he's gotten a lot of MAGA people to back him. And so one of the first things that happened when Ronna got fired is all of his fans, you know, went to Laura Trump and said, "You got to hire this guy. She's so dumb. She doesn't know about his past." And she announces she's hiring him when she doesn't even know anything about this guy other than what people on Twitter are telling her. So this is going to be a complete disaster. This is probably going to be another one of those things where, like when they announced that the Trump campaign announced they were going to hire Laura Loomer and there was a huge firestorm and then they backed down. My suspicion is that is probably going to happen with Presler, but who knows?
This dysfunction in the RNC, I mean, Laura Trump's only been there a week or so and already we're, you know, saw this kind of, you know, mass exodus of staff and this kind of supports my theory that the chaotic actions of the Republican Party over the next 8 months are going to be the reason why they cannot win an election. And in fact, we saw this with the Republican retreat at the conference? Was it only 50% of people showed up for conference?
Yeah. Well, before we go to that, I just want to talk, compare it to the DNC.
Okay.
You know, whatever criticism that people have of Jamie Harrison, and I know he has his critics, you can't deny a couple of things. He is a phenomenal fundraiser. I mean, he has the money rolling in to the RNC. Okay. So, to the DNC, and the RNC is broke. So you have to, and he's very good at turning out the vote efforts as well. So we have lots of money and we have a good apparatus in place to turn out votes. So whatever critics he may have, you can't criticize him really on those two things. The RNC has nothing. They have no money. They just fired their whole staff and they're bringing in bozos. So we have what you just said is correct. We have a huge advantage. Now, what were we switching to now? I forgot.
About this Republican conference, because, yeah. You know, we were talking about earlier, we were talking about the results of the primaries and how, you know, Trump does not have the support that he claims he does. And then that support seems to be the similar when Republicans are trying to organize themselves.
Yeah. So this is their annual retreat, you know, when they're all supposed to come together and, you know, typically you're not going to get everybody, but you might get 80% of the members are going to show up with their families, et cetera, et cetera. So in last few years, it was in Miami. Okay. So they all like to go into Miami this time of year, lots of clubs, lots of restaurants, lots of fun things to do. And so it was fairly well attended, but now we have Speaker Mike Johnson. So less than 50% signed up to go to this. Why? Well, first of all, he had his leadership conference in Miami a few weeks ago and of the leadership team, and they all came out bitching and grumbling that he turned it into a Bible study session.
Right.
And they were not happy. So that word gets out. So, you know, there's people like Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, they don't want to go to a Bible study. Then the next thing he did is he moved it from Miami to West Virginia because he thought Miami was too bad of an influence on his members and it was too hedonistic. So he wanted it to be in a more family friendly atmosphere. Well, you know, these guys all claim to be these family values guys, but they want to go to Miami and party.
Yeah,
they don't want to go to the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? Because again, it's the kind of fake Christian thing, which, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene peddles and Matt Gaetz and everything else. But, you know, behind the scenes, they just want to play. It's just a game. It's about partying. It's about, you know, favoring, you know, garnering support. And as I think the theme to this show has been about this, you know, faux outrage, performative aspects of the Republican Party, but how nothing is what it seems. You know, behind every announcement is a true story to tell, which is, you know, what we try to do.
You know, there's one other factor that I forgot to mention, which is they all hate each other, and they don't really want to spend a week together,
right?
You know, outside of DC, because none of them like each other.
Talking of Marjorie Taylor Greene, she announced that they're planning to repeal the FACE Act if they get an opportunity. Just explain what that is. This is to do with these abortion clinics, isn't it? Like protesting outside in the stairways and doorways and stoops leading up to these places.
This is the fundamental problem with their party right now being able to win elections, is that these crazy fringy people are in charge of a lot of these things and have these. Instead of being a backbencher, put in the corner, sit back there and shut up, they're now running hearings. And these people say crazy things. And what happens is the Democrats seize upon these crazy things and turn it into a huge campaign issue for all Democrats against all Republicans. It hurts all of them. So, you know, the Republicans are trying to run away from the abortion issue desperately. You know, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want it brought up. They don't want it used against them. They don't want to throw any gasoline on the fire. And that's why you have Trump out there talking about a 15-week national abortion ban. It's not really a ban. What he's saying is he's making it legal through 15 weeks. You know, that's not a Republican position traditionally. So, but Marge Greene has taken this one step further. The FACE Act was enacted in 1994, passed overwhelmingly by both parties in the House and Senate, signed a law by Bill Clinton to protect. There was a lot of violence against abortion clinics. They were getting blown up, vandalized. Doctors were getting shot. Clinic staff were getting assaulted. Patients were going in and they were intimidated to go to a clinic.
So much
and
for so pro-life.
This act was put into place to protect those clinics and said, you can still protest outside the clinics, but you have to be X number of feet away. You can't threaten, you can't harass, you can't intimidate people going in and out. And this has been a relatively non-controversial law for a long time until recent years. So now you have Republicans that have been out there complaining every time somebody gets arrested at one of these clinics for doing this, Republicans make a big deal out of it. But that's really all they want to do. All they want to do is complain about how Merrick Garland is enforcing this law. They don't want to repeal it. They don't want, and that's just crazy. That's going to kill them. That's going to cost them votes. But Marjorie Taylor Greene can't help herself. And she says in a committee hearing yesterday that she wants to repeal the FACE Act. And I got to think that Donald Trump and a lot of the leaders of the Republican Party heard that and were like, oh, my God, shut up. Don't say things like that.
Here she is.
Certainly we will pray for them. It shouldn't be that way. And we will repeal the FACE Act if we can get our opportunity. I know each of us definitely would. Let's.
Well, you got Mary Miller and Chip Roy there. Those are, you got a couple of wing nuts flanking her. So
that's a great phrase, Ron. Finally, let's finish this program on an upward note. And that is Mike Lindell is back with more evidence to prove that the election really was stolen. And, time and time again, he announces that tomorrow there's going to be a big reveal. What's the latest one?
This is ridiculous. I mean, you know, this is about Carrie Lake's election, which also doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. This is a leftover from 2022, this case, where she was trying to overturn the governor election that she lost.
Yeah.
She lost in the trial court. Her attorneys, including Alan Dershowitz, were sanctioned and had to pay fines for filing a frivolous lawsuit with no merit. It then went up on appeal and they lost the case on appeal. That should have been the end of it. Carrie Lake's runner, but Mike Lindell is not going to let this go. So, I mean, in theory, even what he's trying to do here, if this gets granted, what are they going to do? Go back and have a trial over whether Carrie Lake's going to be reinstated as governor when she's running for Senate? It's just preposterous. So what it is, you have these lawyers, Kurt Olson is his lead lawyer, that is just continue to bleed him dry of every last dollar by continuing to file these ridiculous things. And Lindell goes along with it. So what the new evidence is that they're supposed to run tests on the voting machines prior to the election on a random sample of voting machines to make sure they're working properly. And they apparently have discovered, they claim, that when they tested the machines, they tested them on 5 machines that were not used in the actual election. They were backup machines. And that was a violation of some kind of rules and regulations because they're supposed to do the tests on machines that are actually used in the election. So they're trying to now dump that on the Supreme Court and say, we have this new evidence. It's all nonsense. They're going to reject this thing. They're probably going to reject it fairly quickly. And, you know, but of course, Lindell has been fundraising like crazy, asking people for money.
And so much of this always boils down to the fact that Republicans simply don't want people to vote. The fewer people that vote, as far as they're concerned, the more chances they have of winning elections. Let's take a look at the clip.
Some are faster than others, but we'll wait when we have to wait like everyone else does.
Hold it, stop. Hang on. I'm gonna make a wild guess here. A wild war room prediction. They won't quick march. They're not gonna quick step Mike Lindell's the machines. You're not going to take with the new evidence. I assume they're going to take their sweet time to docket this thing, sir.
Well, they just might. Guessing. I got the only article came out here. I'm reading They have you and I on a little article here, and they're mocking, saying Mike Lindell says he's going to file a case, that they're going to get a case filed. Well, it was filed yesterday, everybody. So these guys, they can quit mocking. You know, this is Ron is very much a liar over there too. But this is a quote from me. This is not just some tinfoil hat case. This is huge. This new evidence will be.
These people.
He's talking about me, by the way.
I heard him say Ron.
He's reading my article. I'm a liar, he says.
Where did it? Well done, Ron. You've infiltrated the Mike Lindell show.
Not the first time he's complained about me.
Right.
So. Well, listen, or Bannon, for that matter.
No complaints from me. You're my favorite. You know that. We have to finish, but you know, always a thrill. To those who are watching, and if you want to listen, you will listen again. You could find us wherever you get your audio podcasts. The podcast will drop later tonight. If you want to watch it again, because, you know, we're so visually stimulating, the two of us, you just rewind as soon as we've finished and you can catch up. You can comment below, check out our sponsors in the description, and we'll come back and do another Uncovered next Wednesday at the same time. Thanks a lot, Ron.
Yeah, you got it. Things like seems like things just keep getting crazier.